understanding y'all's likes and his dislikes. What an honor, again, just to come and sit and learn from his Torah. Something that gives us order. You know, just talking about when we started the Torah, how they went out in five, how they was going out in order. And that's, and the Torah gives us that same exact order that they was going out in. Keeping his Torah is us going out in order. The Torah keeps us straight, keeps us in line, keeps us uniform. And that's just how they was going out in five, just like that. And we're on Torah portion number 16, Beis Shalach, and it's Hebrew for when sent forth or let go. Exodus 13, 17 through 17, 16. And the half Torah is Judges 4, 4 through 5, 31. We'll jump down where we stopped at. We stopped right here. He who has an ear, put on the right ear. It was talking about putting on the correct armor. You know, it wasn't just man-made armor that we was taught all our lives, the Roman soldier armor. He was talking about his, put on the priestly garment, put on my armor, put on the truth. That's what he was telling us, put on the truth. And how important it is that we put on that truth daily. So important that we put it on. So right here, verse 19, the bones of Yosef. We're gonna try to get as far as we'll try to get to chapter 14 tonight. We got about 60 some slides. We'll try to push it hard, get up in there. But this is the bones of Yosef is so incredible. Verse 19, the bones of Yosef. In Bereshit, Genesis 50:25, Yosef made the children of Israel swear that when Yehovah would visit them, that they should bring his bones up from Mizraim. Now notice, this is, now they, Yehovah said they was going to be in Egypt, they were going to be in captivity for 400 years. So all this time, these bones, Yosef's bones are still there. But no, there was an oath made. And the Torah teaches about that. That when you make an oath, when you make a vow, you do it no matter what. So even 400 years, the children of Israel knew that they had to get Yosef's bones. When they left, they had to make sure they take Yosef's bones. There's a prophetic picture behind this. And we're going to see it coming up right here. There was a definite promise given back that that Yehovah would visit them and that he would deliver them. And by taking the bones of Yosef was a distinct reminder of the promise given and bring great confidence to Israel. Listen, the scripture tells us that Yehovah's word would never return void. Never return void. By Moshe literally bringing Yosef's bones at this time carries great prophetic significance for us today, as we see clearly that Moshe is often referred to in the renewed writings, the New Testament, as the Torah. And is a clear picture of how it is the very Torah of Yehovah that will bring the unified body of Yosef back to the promised land, as promised by Yehovah. And we see a clear prophetic picture of this in Ezekiel 37. Now, I didn't put this Ezekiel in there, but go back and read it. Go back and read this Ezekiel 37. It'll be clear. Probably a lot clearer than what I could explain it tonight to you. I promise you, you will see it as clear as can be. Especially when it talks about how he prophesied to these dry bones. How he told them prophesy, and things begin to happen. Flesh begin to come on, and then the breath of Yehovah breathed life right back into those dry bones. It's incredible. Very incredible. So read Ezekiel 37. This is a great picture of the promise of the return of the lost 10 tribes of Israel and being united with Yehuda and Benjamin. And what we also see is that Yosef's bones also represent his firstborn status, to which he was given by his father and was confirmed in two dreams by Yehovah. Just before Yaakov died, he called for Yosef to confirm his firstborn status and appointed Ephraim, Yosef's secondborn, firstborn status over his brother Manasseh. And by doing this, he also took Yosef's sons as his own, as Reuben and Shimon were. This positioning of Ephraim and Manasseh was very significant, which greatly endorsed Yosef's position and promptness for generations to come. Yosef, as a type or shadow of Messiah, brings this carrying of his bones into great significance. The firstborn will return. Messiah, the firstborn among the dead, will return, and this carries the sure promise of the return of his entire body, his whole bride. The true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, just as the bones in Ezekiel and Ezekiel received life by the breath of Elohim, so too by his spirit and his Torah does he cause us to return. The same exact way, by his Torah and his spirit, how he calls us to return back to him. Very powerful, that Ezekiel. In verse 20, they departed from Sukkot to Etham. On our journey, it is of great importance that we understand the very stops that Israel had on their wilderness journey, as it teaches us along the way and how we can learn vital lessons from each critical arrival or departure stations. And here at this point, we see two being mentioned, Sukkot and Etham. Let us look briefly at these two steps. Stops. Stop one, Sukkot. The first stop in the wilderness journey is called Sukkot, Strong's H5523, which means boots, and this means temporary dwellings. We are sojourners here, and the first stop of coming out of sun worship is to enter into the dwelling of the Most High of Elohim. And what an honor and a privilege it is to keep Sukkot. And the meaning behind Sukkot. How that one day he's going to tabernacle with us all over again. And how he reminds us to rehearse this every year. Every year go over and do it over and over and over again. Because it's us coming out of sun worship. It's us getting it right. It's us having order. It's us doing the Torah and being in order. That's what it does for us. Sukkot is the festival of boots that we keep each year as we remember these wilderness journeys. What are we to remember? Our wilderness journey. How he led us. You know, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but it's because we're going to talk about the cloud and cloud by day and the fire at night. How he led them. And how he leads. You might say, well, I never had my cloud or my, I never seen my fire. Be careful. Yes, we have. Yes, he's leading us. Don't never forget our wilderness journey that the Israelites, the children of Israel, their journey they went through. We went through our same journey. He led us every single day with that same fire and that same cloud. We had that same protection over our lives. We might not have physically been able to see it, but spiritually it's been there. His hand of protection has been over each and every one of our lives, day and night. Day and night. And that we too are sojourners here as we await the return here, as we await the return of Messiah, when he will come and make his boot here among us, and we shall dwell with him forever. This city, stop. We're still in the land of Mitzrayim and reminds us clearly, and although we are still in the world, we are not of the world. It was at Sukkot that Yisrael learned to camp out, as this too was a territory pretty much occupied by Bedouins or tent dwellers. It was here at Sukkot we see from Exodus 13:1-16, that the regulations for the firstborn males are given. And as I said in Revelation 12, the woman bore a male child who will shepherd all the nations with a rod of iron. Our first stop at coming out of Mitzrayim, Babylon, Christianity, is in fact beginning to keep the Sabbath. and to enter his rest each week and learn his Torah as a community that is sojourning together. Are we on this journey by ourselves? No. It says we sojourning together. And Shabbat that just passed, we mentioned that. How we should be that lifting up the body. No, Ephesians 4. How we should be building up the body. Because we're on this journey together. It's not, you know, this race. We're not running a marathon. It's not if I can beat you there. I can beat you to the spot. No. It's praying that we all make it to the spot. No matter when you make it, is that I'm praying that you make it. Because we're in this journey together. But the enemy wants us to think that you're alone. That's his job. Nobody cares about you. Nobody's calling you. Nobody's texting you. But we don't need a call or a text when you have Yehovah with you. He said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. I'm going to lead you day and night. Sadly, there are too many who claim they want to leave Ramses, yet the comfort of inherited lives is too hard for them to let go of, and the first sign of this is simply that they refuse to acknowledge the true Sabbath of Yehovah. Having been so indoctrinated for centuries, most will plainly refuse the truth for a twisted lie that claims that Sabbath changed to Sunday. What most do not realize is the fact that it all comes down to worship, and we are marked by whom we worship in the correct or incorrect observance of the Sabbath of Yehovah. It all comes down to worship. Can't worship him on any day you want to worship him. And that's what people say, well, every day, you know, every day you can worship him. Well, yeah, it is. The truth. Every day you can worship him, but there's a set apart day that he commands us to worship him. And it's just like it says, so many people know the truth, but yet they've just been so indoctrinated that they just refuse to make the change. For whatever purpose it is, whether it's members, whether it's, you know, where about what people's going to say, what people's going to think, how much money's coming in. All that plays into a factor. But can people outgive Yehovah? Can people outbless Yehovah? Not at all. Can Yehovah still lead people? When people leave, can he replace them with more people who wants hunger for the truth? Absolutely. But look, it's a journey. Look, they could have took the shortcut. But he took them the long way. Because he knew the shortcut, they would have run into problems. He knew the shortcut they would have turned around and went back to Egypt. Sometimes it takes a long way to get more of Egypt out of us. We don't realize how much Egypt is still in us. You know, we're doing things, Bible things, Bible ways. But let me tell you, there's still some Egypt in us. Only thing that's got to happen is that little circumstance pop up. You will see exactly how much Egypt is in you. Let somebody just rub you the wrong way that one morning that you're having a bad morning, or you didn't wake up on the right side of the bed. And watch how much Egypt jumps out of you. But who knows best? Are we going to trust Yehovah that his journey is the better path for our life, or our journey? I want to choose his journey, no matter how long it takes me to get there. Listen, he's leading me. What I have to fear? What I have to worry about? What I have to complain about? We're going to get to some complaining topics in a little while. It's good, too. What I have to complain about? Sukkot is the seventh feast of Yehovah and clearly pictures for us the time he comes to dwell with us and is a shadow picture of the millennial reign when the child who was born will shepherd the nations with a rod of iron. Our mark, sign of worship, is our Sabbath keeping, for he has given us his Sabbath as a sign between us and him forever. He has given his Sabbath for a sign between us and him. Ezekiel 20:12 and Ezekiel 20:20. And I also gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between them and me, to know that I am Yehovah who set them apart. Who's setting us apart? Yehovah is setting us apart. Listen, and the world knows it also. They just don't want to admit it. But they know. They read the same scripture we read. Ezekiel 20:20. And set apart my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you to know that I am Yehovah your Elohim. Exodus 31:13-14. And you speak to the children of Israel, saying, my Sabbaths you are to guard by all means. Means guard it with everything that is in you. By all means necessary. Whatever it takes, you guard my Sabbath. If you're tired, guard it. If you're not feeling well, guard it. Guard my Sabbath by all means. With everything. Listen, we guarded a lot of other things with everything that was in us. When we were sick, we still guarded. When we didn't feel like it, we still guarded. When we was tired, we still guarded. Like, really, really tired. Like, barely could function tired. But somehow, you know, we fish a little hard or hunt a little hard. And, you know, I'm tired. It's just a Friday night. Oh, boy. That's when it starts, Friday night. Not get it twisted. But we can stay up for hours when it was that time of the year, wrapping presents till the daylight. We was guarding it heavy, hard. By all means, I guarded that. I guarded it. Well, probably not as much as my wife guarded, but sometimes I would have. Not in a bad way. The moms did all the hard work when it comes to that time of, you know, wrapping present situation thing. But we guarded it. As a family, we guarded it. By all means necessary, we guarded it. But what he says, my Sabbath, say to the children of Israel, my Sabbath you are to guard by all means. For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations. Is there people still on this face of this earth? Generations, throughout your generation. We still here. We still having kids. It ain't never ceased. To know that I am Yehovah. That I, Yehovah, am setting you apart. And you shall guard the Sabbath, for it is set apart to you. Everyone who profanes it shall certainly be put to death. For anyone who does work on it, that being shall be cut off from among his people. It is truly here at the Sukkot stop, in the sense where we can learn to rest in him and allow his word to give us his peace and strength. So we move from calling upon his name and receiving the sign of our worship by keeping his Shabbat. The enemy also has a marked sign of worship. And that is Sunday worship. He always try to counterfeit. He always try to copy. Always try to, you know, he wants to make a copy of what Yehovah established. But he could never copy the original. He can never have the original. All he can do is try to make a copy. And he's done it. He's done a good job for over the years. He made it look original. We thought it was original. That's how good he is. That's how important the Torah is to our lives. That important. Because without it, we wouldn't know. We'd still be doing the Sunday thing without the Torah. Without the truth becoming real to us. And all who follow the beast in his image by worshiping on the day of the sun, while forsaking to keep the Sabbath of Yehovah, receive the mark of the beast on their forehead as they cognitively choose to disregard the Torah and follow the beast under the teachings of traditions and man-made dogmas, as well as on their right hand, which, as we know in Scripture, that the right hand is symbolic of that by which one works. And so by working and not resting on the Sabbath of Yehovah, then one is in fact receiving the mark of the beast too. This is serious business, and part of our coming out of Mizraim, Babylon, is to forsake the traditions of the world and its institutionalized forms of worship that has clearly adopted pagan practices as its basis and means of existence. Having been very crafty in syncretizing the truth, twisting it and blending it in with customs and traditions that controlled the masses and amassed wealth for elite hierarchy. As one leaves Ramses and camps at Sukkot, one learns the joys of the feast and appointed times of Yehovah, realizing that although we are still in this world, we do not worship the way the world worships any longer, but strictly according to the way the Torah instructs. Strictly according to the way the Torah instructs. Just because we're in this world, that don't mean we got to act like them. That don't mean we got to do the things they do, partake into the things that they partake in. He's telling us, no, you have to be set apart. And that's what keeping his Shabbat is, keeping his Sabbath, keeping his feast day. Is being set apart. And just like it says, and one learns the joy. Keeping his feast days brings so much joy to each and every one of us. I heard it out of your own mouth. How much joy it brings. Until day seven. For day one through five, you're smiling. Day seven gets a little rough. These first two stations, that of our departure and the first stop on our journey, Ramses and Sukkot, are the keys to the beginning of our wilderness journey. This is not the end, but rather simply the beginning of a wonderful journey of discovery and growth in Messiah, and requires great endurance. It requires great endurance. And it is a journey, a wonderful journey. Keep starting with Sukkot. This is a wonderful picture of the people of Elohim, Israel, that is you and I included, who turn away from what the world has to offer, as we see our dwelling is with the Most High, who will come and tabernacle with us. Sukkot, we know, refers to the seventh feast of booths, when it shadows pictures for us the time when Yeshua will come to take up his bride in Sukkot with her. What is a powerful picture for us in understanding where we are headed toward Sukkot and our need to steer clear of what the world has to offer. We have full assurance that this promise is true as being sealed by the blood of Messiah. When we look at the word for Sukkot, Strong's H5523, in the ancient script, we find a beautiful confirmation of this fact. The Samach. The ancient script has this letter pictured as, which is a thorn, and has the meaning of pierce and sharp, and can also carry the meaning of a shield or protection, as thorn bushes were used by the shepherds to build a wall to enclose their flock in the night against the attack of predators. Another meaning would be to grab hold of, as a thorn is a seed that clings to hair and clothing. The Kaf. The ancient form of this letter meaning the open palm of a hand. The meaning behind this letter is to bend and curve, from the shape of a palm as well as to tame or subdue, as one has been bent to another's will under their hand. As an open hand symbolizes submission, the picture of the palm of the hand also represents covering. The ancient script has this letter, as which is pictured as two cross sticks, and can represent for a seal, covenant, mark, or sign. As this one once again points to the complete work of Messiah in the renewal of the covenant, his blood, that brings the two houses of Israel and Yehuda together in him as one, for he is not only the Aleph, but is also the Tav, the beginning and the end of all creation. Now, when we understand that these three letters make up Sukkot, I find it very fascinating, as we see being pictured here, that Yeshua is our good shepherd, who has sealed us in his blood as Yehovah extended his right hand to us. And we see that Messiah not only had a crown of thorns put on his head and had a reed placed in his right hand, as well as being stricken for us, but he willingly gave his life for us in order to secure us and cause us to be made into the dwelling place of the Most High, where he will Sukkot with us when the two sticks, Yehuda and Ephraim, are brought back together as one. Can you see the clear significance of Sukkot? We take note that the word Sukkot in the ancient pictograph lettering can render for us the following: protected covering of the covenant. Listen, you know, we host Sukkot, we keep Sukkot, but there's so much more of a meaning behind it. Do we really realize the price that was paid for us to have Sukkot? And one day that Yehovah and Yeshua will dwell among us. Because of his blood, the protected covering of the covenant. They left Sukkot and camped at Etham. Etham. This stop, Etham, Strong's H864, means with them or their plowshare. In understanding the meaning of with them, we can see how in Revelation 12, Satan is cast out of heaven down to earth where man dwells, and so now he is with them, so to speak. And it is here that he has set up his government control through the beast. Etham deals with sin that is here with us and the realization of how Yehovah is also here with us by his spirit. And therefore, we must deal with sin in our lives and not accept the rule of sin and lawlessness, but rather be diligent to walk in the instructions of Yehovah. Listen, we got to deal with it. It is among us. Everywhere you look, sin is among us. You can't run from it. You can't hide from it. It's here. But that don't mean we have to accept it. He's telling us if you walk in his instructions, you don't have to accept that. You don't have to, partake in the lust of the flesh, the sin that's in this world. No, he says, diligently walk in the instructions of Yehovah. This is a place of reality check. We must choose wisely whom we serve. Listen, we're going to serve one or the other or something. Every day, I remember, it stuck with me because Pastor Charlotte made this statement. How every morning when she wakes up, she says, Father, or Yehovah, today I choose to serve you. And ever since then, I made that my very first statement every single morning I wake up. Because one day, you're going to choose something. And as soon as my eyes, I want to choose him. As soon as my eyes open up, I don't want to choose nothing else. You choose him, you can't go wrong. If you choose to serve him that day, you can't go wrong. Does that mean that my day is going to go perfect? Does that mean, I'm going to be, on cloud 9 every single day? No,
There's days I'm going to be in the valley. That's just part of my journey. But he's still with me. He's still with me in the valley. He's still with me on the mountain. So I'm going to choose to serve him every single day of my life. In my good days and my bad days, I'm still going to choose to serve him. This is a place of reality check. We must choose wisely whom we serve. We know that Satan is here and he is constantly on the prowl like a lion, waiting for the slightest opportunity to jump on. Always looking for someone to devour. Always looking for someone to devour. Always looking for a family to tear up. Always looking for a teenager to sow lies and doubt. You get them to do things that they shouldn't be doing. Trying to break up families. Trying to take someone's life. It's just what he does. It's just what a lion does. Ready to devour somebody. It is at this early stage of the journey where, in fact, he does devour many as insecurities begin to set in, and compromise can be the cause of many as they tend to follow the crowd, preferring to be with them rather than living set apart and have the prospect of being persecuted. With Itham can also picture for us an understanding with them their plowshare. We can see great joy in knowing that during the kingdom, Messiah will dwell with us, and we will beat our swords into plowshares. Listen to what Micah, the prophet, says. Micah 4, 1 through 5. And in the latter days it shall be that the mountain of the house of Jehovah is established on the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow to it. And many nations shall come and say, come, and let us go up to the mountain of Jehovah, to the house of Elohim of Yaakov, and let him teach us his ways. I can't wait for that. To where I get to sit and learn from him. The Torah teacher himself. Man, you just think we say in Shabbat, you know, what an honor to be in. Come to Shabbat now and learn from his Torah. But to have the way I can taste it when he's teaching it. The one who kept the Torah to the fullest. The only one who kept it to the fullest. To learn from him. To learn from the master. What an honor. What a day that's going to be. I can't wait. And let us walk in his path. For out of Zion comes forth the Torah and the word of Jehovah from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among many peoples and reprove strong nations afar off. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither teach battle any more. But each one shall sit under his vine and under his fig tree, with no one to make them afraid, for the mouth of Jehovah of hosts has spoken. Well, I made a statement earlier, what I said, but Jehovah's word will never return void. What a promise. This is going to happen. This will happen. The mouth of Jehovah has spoken, for all the peoples walk, each one in the name of his mighty one, but we walk in the name of Jehovah Elohim forever and ever. We'll walk in the name of Jehovah our Elohim forever and ever. That name, I can't express enough how powerful and how important it is to know that name. We was talking about these Yeti cups last Shabbat, and my wife made a statement, and it stuck with me, because she said it was talking about prices of the Stanley Cup compared to the Yeti cup. She said it's always about the name. And I was like, man, how powerful is that? Because that's the truth. It's always about his name. It's always his name. The name of Jehovah. Think about how powerful that is.
with their plowshare can also speak to us of the unity of Israel, which is renewed at the Feast of Sukkot, and how we then plow the ground for the next year's growth. So what we can see from this stop is the clear distinction between who is with us, Emmanuel, or the imposter. May we truly learn to walk in and stay in Messiah as we work the fields of the harvest. For he who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is not worthy for the kingdom. This is where the work begins, and it is not the time to give up, but rather get stuck in and give it your all. Give it your all. This is not the time when things get a little tough, your hands might get a little sore, to pull off. No, it's time to dig deep. It's time to get that energy, find that energy that's deep down inside you and plow even harder. Because he says you're not fit for the kingdom if you do that, if you look back, take your hand off the plow. Verses 21 and 22, column of cloud and pillar of fire. These two verses we would do well to consider carefully and remember, for it is from this that we can see a clear picture that gives us great confidence in seeing how Yehovah assures us that he will never leave us nor forsake us. He will never leave us nor forsake us. So yes, we had our column of cloud and pillar of fire. Every single day, even when we didn't deserve the column of cloud and pillar of fire, we had it. Here the Israelites had the very presence of Yehovah with them all day and all night, and it never ceased. The visible proof of his presence would certainly encourage them to not slow down. Not slow down. They had light for both the night and the day, and so they could journey as he led them. We too are called to be diligent. As we have come out of darkness into his marvelous light and walk as children of light, not asleep, but keeping watch, meditating on his word day and night. With his very Torah on our hearts and Messiah dwelling in us by his Spirit, we too have his presence with us day and night. And we need never fear as we stay in him and walk the path of righteousness as his word leads. Let his word lead us. If we're walking according to his Torah, according to his word, there's nothing we need to fear. Nothing. He will provide for us every single time. He will make provision. He will protect us every single time if we're walking according to his word. We'll let his word lead us. He promised that whoever follows him would never walk in darkness. His Torah is a light to our path and a lamp to our feet. Why would we want to move out of that? Why? Why would I want to give up that? Why would I want to give up that provision, that protection? Why would I want to seek something else when I got his promises? Nothing else can do that for us. Nothing else can promise. They can promise it. Let me rephrase that. They can promise it, but they can't fulfill it. He fulfills his promise. Every single one of them. The Hebrew root word for cloud is anah, Strong's H6051, which means a cloud, cloud mass, heavy mist, and can also mean covering. We know from Scripture that Israel moved camp when the cloud moved and pitched camp and stayed where the cloud stayed, always teaching them never to go or stay without the presence of Yehovah. Listen, and let that be a life lesson for us. Never go or stay without the presence of Yehovah. Listen, you traveling, you want his presence with you. Wherever you stop to lay your head for the night, you want his presence with you. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, whatever task you're taking upon that day, you want his presence with you every single day. I don't want to move unless he moves with me. And one thing I want to point out, because notice
what in the Hebrew lettering. See the first letter, the ayin, the Y? And that's enough.
What is interesting to note is that there were times when Yisrael grumbled, which at times may have possibly arose due to the fact that they had to pack up camp and move on when the cloud of Yehovah moved. Notice they grumbled.
About to be good.
In Hebrew, there's a word that sounds similar to this Hebrew word for cloud, yet it carries a negative connotation, and that is the word ana. Sounds the same. The spelling is almost the same except the first letter.
Look at Zala.
Strong's H596, which means to complain or murmur.
We ain't never complained.
I ain't never complained.
Yeah, no, of course not. Why I ain't got this? Why I ain't got that? Why I got more on this journey? You ever thought, you know, that things you prayed for, he didn't give it to you because he knew you couldn't handle it?
Very similar sounding words, yet very different indeed. In understanding that the Hebrew word for cloud also means covering, it speaks of our protection and provision. It represents our safety and refers to the presence of Yehovah. And so by seeing these two very similar sounding, yet contrasting words, which differ only by the first letter, for the word for cloud or covering begins with the ayin, and the word for complain begins with the letter aleph. And for me, this speaks a very important message for us. When people try to assume that their own covering, their own ways and means of provision and care, they will always come up short and never be satisfied and will always complain. What does complaining reveal? It simply reveals ingratitude of Yehovah's care.
You know what's dangerous about complaining? Is that it's contagious. People flock to that. You start complaining, guess what? You're gonna have an entourage, I guess that's how they call it, huh?
Just following you. Complaining along with you. They can't wait for that. It's like wildfire. All you need is one little spark. One little conversation, and let me tell you, it is on. That's what's dangerous about complaining.
Is that it just, people flock to that. They jump on that bandwagon quick.
It simply reveals ingratitude of Yehovah's care. This word, anah, Strong's H596, is used in Numbers 11, verse 1. And it came to be when the people were as complainers, it was evil in the ears of Yehovah. Oh boy. It was evil in the ears of Yehovah. So be careful the next time you want to complain to someone or even to yourself. Because he calls it evil in his ears. And Yehovah heard it. And his displeasure burned. And the fire of Yehovah burned among them and consumed those in the outskirts of the camp. Notice where they was at. The outskirts of the camp. Notice the one that's complaining. The one that's not doing nothing, sitting on the sideline. But the one that's in the trenches, getting their hands dirty, getting the calluses on their hand with the plowing. But the ones that, why are they doing it like that? Why are they doing it this way? If it was me, yeah, well, me sitting over there. But they're on the outskirts. Got a whole bunch of them on the outskirts just sitting, watching, looking, complaining. Continue
consumed those in the outskirts of the camp. They wasn't in the camp. It was the ones tired of putting up the camp, taking the camp down. How many times we got to do that? How many times we got to put up the sucker in the church? How many times we got to take it down? We know it's got to go up before Sukkot. We know we got to come down after Sukkot. The outskirts of the camp. Yehovah hears it. You might say it. You might mumble it. You might say it underneath your breath. Don't matter if we hear it. He hears it. It don't displease us. Well, if we do hear, we probably get a little agitated, you know. We want to exhale. But in Yehovah, here, in his ears, is evil. It's evil in his ears. Here the Israelites had all they need. Think about that. Had all they need and still complain. Listen, we have all we need. We have all we need. We have nothing to complain about over here. Nothing. And more than that, they had the presence of Yehovah in their midst. Oh, man. The presence of the Almighty in your midst. Listen, the presence of the Almighty is in our midst. Every single day of our life. He's in our midst. Be careful when we complain. Life is good. Life is great over here in Burris, Louisiana, Venice, Louisiana. They neglect his covering and sought their own in terms of pleasures. They would rather have had. And so they ended up complaining about what they didn't have. They complain about what they used to have, and they also complain about what they had at that time. That's still true today. We still complain about the same thing. We complain about things we don't have, things we used to have, and things I should have. Again, probably don't have it because he knew you'd make a mess of it if he give it to you. He's got to trust you with a little before he gives you much. Have you ever found yourself complaining like this? Amen. Yep, I have. You don't have what you want. You don't have what you used to have, and you don't like what you have now. Does this sound familiar to some? The danger and problem with complaining is that it is contagious. Your complaining will affect and even infect others into complaining. And before you know it, can end up like we have just read, a mixed multitude of grumblers lusting for a selfish pleasure. This is what the Torah does for you. It's not just stories for us, you know, of what they happened to them back then. This is real life stuff for us today. Don't do the same thing they did. Shaul tells us in Philippians 2:14-15, do all matters without grumbling and disputing, in order that you be blameless and faultless, children of Elohim without blemish in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as light in the world. Listen, if we as believers, if a non-believer only hear us grumbling and complaining, what chance you think they got? What chance you think you got of winning them over to Yehovah? What chance you think you being light to them? They in darkness, and guess what you just did? Guess what you just did? You just led them into more darkness. At first, they just had a little glimpse of light. Now they ain't got nothing. Just dark like it was in Egypt from one of the plagues. Darkness. They couldn't see nothing. That's what we just did. When they see us complaining about what we don't have or what we should have or what we did used to have. Forgetting about that we have him in our midst. Do all matters without grumbling and disputing, in order that you are be blameless and faultless, children of Elohim without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. Don't grumble and complain, for then you cannot shine as light in the world. Being under the cloud is the emphasis of Numbers 9, as it is used 11 times in Numbers 9:15 to 22, and 11 times in verses 8, in 8 verses. The emphasis was being under the guidance and directions of Yehovah, yet they were, in one sense, trying to be what we could call their own cloud makers. Trying to rely on self and leaning back towards slavery rather than relying on the covering of Yehovah. And this is what made Yehovah angry. That's what made him angry. After all what I'm doing for y'all, after all what I've done for y'all, you're still leaning back and going towards slavery. You still want to choose that. After I've made a way after way after way for you. Complainers, all they do is complain, and in the process are destructive rather than constructive. And the wrath of Yehovah consumed the outskirts of the camp, perhaps where most of the complainers were. Have you noticed that it's always those on the outskirts or the sidelines that tend to be the ones who chirp the most and offer up the most criticism? Listen, all you got to do is go to the sport function. Go to high school. If you haven't even been to a high school game lately, go to one. And let me tell you, the ones on the sidelines all made it to the pros. Every last one of them. You swear they did. Them outskirts, them complainers. Don't know why the coach called that play. Don't know why this boy did this. Don't know why this boy did that. It really is. It's the truth. It is the truth. You know what's sad? We're talking about high school, but it even gets so bad to where they do this in a little Banner League kids game. I'm telling you, all these people on the outskirts, yeah, they big time. They made it. They ain't got out the parish. All they do is chirp.
Those who are never willing to actually get involved and be committed. Those who are never willing to actually get involved and be committed. Now I'm going to get back on our church folks. Never want to get involved or be committed. You have to be committed to keeping his feast days. You have to get involved for keeping his feast days. Listen, it takes time. It takes hands-on to do things in the church. To put things up and take things down. You just don't snap things. Just don't snap your finger and it boof, you know? Sukkah goes up. No, get involved and be committed to it. But nobody wants to make a commitment. They want to talk commitment, but they don't want to actually be committed to it. We'll always moan and groan about something. And that is the problem. Idleness. No commitment to fellowship and building. And this sadly results more often than not into a crew of complainers. Complaining about what is not. What was better somewhere else. And what sucks here. Hey, I'm just speaking as straight as the word is. In verse 6, these complainers basically were saying, all there is here is manna. So all we got to eat is manna. The promise given in Exodus 13:21 is clear. Yehovah's presence would not cease before the people. And this must give us the confidence to fully trust in him as his spirit is with us, leading us and teaching us his way. Thank him for his set apart spirit that give us eyes to see, ears to hear, and a heart to want to know him more. It's his spirit that's leading us and teaching us his ways. He would lead them by day and give them light by night. And the word lead in the Hebrew is the root word, naha, Strong's H5148, which means to lead, guide, bring forth, and govern. His presence leads us and guides us and governs us on the way. This word, naha, Strong's H5148, is also used in Psalms 5, verse 8, and Psalms 23:3. O Yehovah, lead me in your righteousness. Because of those watching me, make your way straight before my face. Psalms 23:3. He turns back my being. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Psalms 27:11 and Psalms 31:3. Teach me your way, O Yehovah, and lead me in a smooth path because of my enemies. Because you are my rock and my stronghold. For your name's sake, lead me and guide me. Isaiah 58:11. Then Yehovah will guide you continually and satisfy your being in drought and strengthen your bones. And you shall be like a water garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. How powerful is that when Yehovah is doing the leading and guiding you? It says continually and satisfy you in a drought. Listen, when you're at your lowest, when you're at your driest, he'll satisfy you. Strengthen your bones. At night, he will give them light, which is the primitive root verb or, Strong's H215, which means to be or become light. Or give light. And from this we see the derivative or Strong's H217, which actually means a flame, fire, fires, light, or light of fire. The plural of the word or Strong's H217 is used in Exodus 28:30. And unto the breastplate of right ruling you shall put the Urim and the Thummim. And they shall be on the heart of Aharon when he goes in before Yehovah. And Aharon shall bear the right ruling of the children of Israel on his heart before Yehovah continually. The Urim, Strong's H224, means lights or illuminations. This was placed in the breastplate of the right ruling of the high priest together with the tomb, plural of tomb, tomb. And carries the meaning of perfection. While there is no evidence to clearly tell us what the Urim and the Thummim consist of, be it stones or any other substance, what we can see is that the high priest would use these in order to get right rulings, and so speaks of seeking the perfect truth from Yehovah. What is very interesting and worth of noting is that the first letter of the Urim is the Aleph, and the first letter of the Thummim is the Tall. Revelation 1:8 and Isaiah 44:6. I am the Aleph and the Tall, the beginning and the end, says Yehovah, who is and who was and who is to come, the Almighty. Isaiah 44:6. Thus says Yehovah, Sovereign of Israel, and his Redeemer, Yehovah of hosts, I am the first and I am the last. Besides me, there is no Elohim. What are the Urim and the Thummim? They are the things that illuminate and perfect. We know that Yeshua is the light, and he was the perfect lamb. And so this represents for us our need to hunger and thirst for righteousness and be perfect before Elohim. For he is perfect, and we are called to be the salt and light, which we can only be when we seek out his right ruling and walk according to that which is to be upon our heart. His Torah, Notice the positions of the Urim and the Thummim in the breastplate.
By the heart. Notice where it's at, by the heart. Where his door is, it's here right on the table by the heart.
He writes his Torah on our hearts, and so it is our hearts and mouths that we may do it. Yisrael had the light illumination of the truth, and therefore were not in darkness. And our Master, Yeshua Messiah, is life, and the life is the light of men. And that's John 1:4. Those who are in the Master and stay in him have life, and life abundantly, and need not fear the darkness of evil. When we consider the clear picture of Yisrael having light while Mitzrayim were in thick darkness, we are also able to recognize the joy of having the strength and power of our Master, giving us secure light in our soul journey. What is worth taking note of in terms of the Hebrew word for light, we are able to see a powerful truth being given to us through the ancient pictograph of this word. The Hebrew word that is translated as light, Strong's H2, or Strong's H216, is written in the ancient pictograph script as follows. The Aleph. This is the letter Aleph, an ancient script pictured as the head of an ox, and represents strength, meaning muscle, as the ox is the strongest of the livestock animals. This also carries the meaning of yoke, as an ox is placed in a yoke in order to plow or pull a heavy load in the right direction. This can also picture for us the red heifer sacrifice that Yeshua Messiah fulfilled. The Vav. This is the Hebrew letter Vav, which in the ancient script is a peg or tent peg, which was used for securing or tying the tent or other items. The possibility of it having a Y shape is to show that it prevents the rope from slipping off. The root meaning of this letter is to add, secure, or hook, as well as bind. The Resh, the ancient script has this letter and is pictured as the head of a man and has the meaning of the head of a man as well as the chief, top, beginning, or first. It has the meaning of the top as in the top of a head of a body and chief as in the head of a tribe or people, as well as the one who rules the people. Every house has a head of the home, and all in the house submit to the instructions of the one who is the head of the home, listening to and obeying the words that the head speaks. When we consider these ancient pictograph letters that render the word for light, we can clearly see a powerful lesson in terms of our Master, the light of the world, giving us the rendering, strength secured in the head. Listen, he represents that Y shape. Listen, you want to tie on to that. You want to tie on to him, and you can't break away from that when you tie on to him. He secures you. He's the strength secured in the head. And that Resh, how he says, that Resh is the head of the home. And we need to be listening to the head of the home. We want to listen to everything Messiah said and did. Why? Because he kept this to the fullest. As men, head of our home, if you want our wives and kids to listen to us, this right here. This as our head did. This is our Messiah did. Kept it to the fullest. We need to keep it to the fullest. We have great confidence and security in being able to be strong and courageous as we walk in the light of, as our Master, of our Master, who is our head, is in the light, and in him we have been secured into his covenants of promise, having called us out of darkness into his marvelous light, for his word lights our path in a dark and depraved world. His word lights our path in this dark, dark world. Yisrael was therefore given light in the darkness, which metaphorically reminds us of how we need not fear the darkness of this world. As Yehovah gives us the light of his word and illuminates it to us, helping us be led forth in peace, as his word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path, We need not be ignorant of our master's plans, for we do not walk in the dark, as we have his truth that lights our way.
We don't have to be ignorant about what's going on, about what path we need to be on.
It says his word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path.
And there's nothing, we don't have to fear it. We don't have to fear if we're holding on to this. If we letting this dude lead him, we can't go wrong. We don't have to worry about going off to the wrong path. If we do go off to the wrong path, it's because we went off. It's not because his word changed. Because we made the decision to go off the wrong path. This don't change at all. It never did. Never will. You follow this, you're going to be on the right path until he returns. We don't have to fear about getting off or fear about what's going on in this world. This is telling us exactly what's going on in this world. This is unfolding right before our eyes. The very truth is unfolding right before our eyes.
First Thessalonians 5:4-8. But you, brothers, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. For you are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of the darkness. So then, we should not sleep as others do, but we should watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. But we who are of the day should be sober, putting on the breastplate of belief and love, and as a helmet, the expectation of deliverance. Chapter 14. Still got some time? A little while? Well, let's read it then. Chapter 14, Exodus 14:1. And Yehovah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to the children of Israel that they turn and camp before Pi-Haroth, between Migdol and the sea, opposite of Baal, Zephon, camp before it by the sea. For Pharaoh shall say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has closed them in. Pharaoh thinks he's got them. And I shall strengthen the heart of Pharaoh, and he shall pursue them. But I am to be esteemed before Pharaoh and over all his army. And the Mishraites shall know that I am Yehovah. And they did so. And it was reported to the sovereign of Mizraim that the people had fled. And the heart of Pharaoh and his servants was turned against the people. And they said, why have we done this, that we had let Israel go from serving us? So he made his chariot ready and took his people with him. And he took 600 choice chariots and all the chariots of Mizraim with officers over all of them. And Yehovah strengthened the heart of Pharaoh, sovereign of Mizraim. And he pursued the children of Israel. But the children of Israel went out defiantly. And the Mizraites pursued them. And all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army. And overtook them, camping by the sea beside Pi-Haroth, before Baal Zephon. And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes and saw the Mizraites coming up after them. And they were greatly afraid, so the children of Israel cried out to Yehovah. And they said to Moshe, did you take us away to die in the wilderness? The grumbling is coming, the complaining is coming. Here we go. Because there are no burial sites in Mizraim, what is this you have done to us to bring us out of the Mizraim? This is not the word that we spoke to you in Mizraim. Is this not the word that we spoke to you in Mizraim, saying, leave us alone and let us serve the Mizraites? For it would have been better for us to serve the Mizraites than to die in the wilderness. And Moshe said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the deliverance of Yehovah, which he does for you today. For the Mizraites whom you see today, you will never, never to see again. Yehovah does fight for you, and you keep silent. And Yehovah said to Moshe, why do you cry to me? speak to the children of Israel and let them go forward. Notice what their crying did to Moshe. Moshe then started his crying to Yehovah. And you, lift up your rod and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, and let the children of Israel go on dry ground throughout the midst of the sea. And I, see, I am stretching the hearts of the Mishrites, strengthening the hearts of the Mishrites, and they shall follow them. And I am to be esteemed through Pharaoh and over all his army, his chariots, and his horsemen. And the Mishrites shall know that I am Yehovah when I am esteemed through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And the messenger of Elohim, who went before the camp of Israel, moved and went behind them. And the column of cloud went from before them and stood behind them, and came between the camp of the Mishrites and the camp of Israel, and it was the cloud and the darkness, and it gave light by night. And the one did not come near the other all the night. And Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea, and Yehovah caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea into dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on the right and on their left. And the Mishrite pursued and went after them into the midst of the sea, all the horses of Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to be in the morning watch that Yehovah looked down upon the army of the Mishrites through the column of fire and cloud, and he brought the army of the Mishrites into confusion. And he took off their chariot wheels, so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Mishrites said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for who? For Yehovah fights for them against the Mishrites. Then Yehovah said to Moshe, stretch out your hand over the sea, and let the waters come back upon the Mishrites and their chariots and on their horsemen. And Moshe stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its usual flow at the break of day with the Mishrites fleeing into it. Thus Yehovah overthrew the Mishrites in the midst of the sea. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them, and not even one was left of them. And the children of Israel walked on dry ground in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on the right and on their left. Thus Yehovah saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Mishrites, and Israel saw that the Mishrites did on the seashore. And Israel saw the great work which Yehovah had done in Mizraim, and the people feared Yehovah and believed Yehovah and his servant Moshe. We'll stop right there. I just wanted to read that because that was powerful when I read it this evening. How Yehovah fought for them. Listen. You might be going through something that you might be thinking that you're drowning. But listen, Yehovah fights for you. Listen, all you got to do is call upon his name and you will walk on dry ground. Listen, this was true. We've seen this what's his name? The archaeologist that found all the chariots. What? Earth? Ryan Wyatt. It's proven. He found it. It happened. At the very spot that the scripture said it happened at. It's powerful. Listen, we don't have to fear anything. If we're walking according to his Torah, according to his word, we have nothing to fear. Because Yehovah will fight for us. He will fight for us. And this chapter 14 is good. Really is. Just have to wait till next year to get back on. But thank y'all for coming out tonight. I appreciate y'all coming and pushing through. Look, you get tired. You really do. I understand. We human. But he tells us to diligently seek after him. Diligently. By all means necessary. Amen. He's good.